ठीक है, मैं तो कुछ भी नहीं बोल रही।
Mark, are you in the office right now? Christian, please. Mark?
I am not.
Oh, okay.
number one, two.
Hi, everybody who is on the call. They need to manually unlock the door. And so apparently they will be here in about 15 minutes.
How about now?
That's all I have.
Thank you.
Fabulous. Okay, cool. We'll get started. Hello, everybody. It's good to see you. Merry Christmas. If you celebrate, or happy holidays. Finally, we can get the show on the road. I hope you guys are having a very good exam period, a good good season for examinations. Can't imagine being in. No, I can. I've been in school for 4 years, so I should know what it means to be doing exams. I do once again hope that all is well with you all. And if not, then it's only looking up from here. Okay. So we'll begin by respectfully acknowledging that our university and our students and our students' union are located on Treaty 6 territory. We are grateful to be on Cree, Dene, Salto, Métis, Blackfoot, and Nakota Sioux territory, specifically the ancestral space of the Papoose Cree. These nations are our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Alberta Students' Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work towards the decolonization of Indigenous knowledges and traditions. I'd also like to take this time to remind you that this space is one of representation. We are here for others and not for ourselves. And I do hope that that promise is kept and reminded as we continue. Okay, we're going to get right into our council attendance sheet. Some of y'all may know how things went in the summer in our first trimester regarding attendance. So, if things aren't looking all too smooth, please do email me because we need to have a tough conversation. Anywho, on the bright side, we'll begin. So, President Lay, Vice President Montero, Vice President Fote, Vice President Kimani, Vice President Dixon, Governor Conrad, Councillor Taha, Councillor Kurfe.
Here.
Councillor Yabut.
Here.
Councillor Vaughan. I don't see, okay. Councillor Villa.
Present.
Councillor Villoso. Councillor Kaur.
Here.
Councillor Beasley. Councillor Amar.
Here.
Councillor Gardner. Councillor Morris. Councillor Motoska. Councillor Ulet, or Councillor Ulet's proxy. Councillor Thakur. Councillor Thakur? No? Okay. Councillor Kara. Councillor Kara. Councillor Kuka. Councillor Batiki. Councillor Zafar. Councillor Zafar? Okay. Councillor DePrato? Holy. Councillor Gill? Councillor Chopra?
Present.
All right. Councillor Brownbein?
Here.
Thank you. Thank you. Councillor Lala?
Present.
Councillor Sivakumaran? Councillor Barazesh? Councillor Dillon?
Oh, here.
Councillor Yola? No? Okay. All right. Is Mr. Dumichel here as well? No? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, hi. Really? Thank you. If we have any guests, please do message me in the chat via Zoom, and I'll be able to record you in our attendance as well. Fabulous. So moving right into our agenda. First, obviously, the speaker's business. Mine is just to remind you all, while the end of semester is here, at the end of this meeting, I'll be sending you all a form for which we'll give you the opportunity to nominate one of your peers or yourself for the Counselor Scholarship. Once again, you know, last time we had two fabulous counselors being nominated and winning. And so hopefully we can have more nominations so we can have a vote, because I think all of you guys have been doing fantabulous work. And if I could, I would nominate you all. So please do go ahead and fill in that form. And once again, I will send it at the end of this meeting. Please fill in the form because we'll be able to like have our vote in the next meeting, which would be in the new year, and congratulate the winners thereof. Okay, I will not be extending it because like it's a Christmas break, so there'll be tons of time to think about who you'd want to nominate, if it being yourself. So I'm looking at you. I want you to nominate yourself. Fabulous. Okay, we're going to move forward to our presentations. Oh, sorry, to consent agenda. It seems that there isn't anything on our consent agenda to be put forward other than last session's meetings. Unless I'm missing something, I'm going to check. Doesn't seem to be. No, we're on consent agenda, so I'm going to that. Jumping the gun already, sir?
Come on.
Okay. So there seems to be no changes to the agenda and minutes of the last session. So we're going to move forward swiftly to presentations. And this is a motion by Councillor Dillon to allow the ICE to present on the FAMP proposal. Do you have a seconder for that? Put forward by Councillor Barazesh. Already. So are they present?
Yeah, I'm presenting.
Okay. Have you, do you have your slides already?
Yeah, am I good to go?
Let's take a look. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So this is just kind of an update in terms of our FAMF proposal from 2 weeks ago. So again, I'm Rhea, I'm the VPAF of the ICE, and we are the Faculty Association for the Science Faculty. And just so you know, ICE represents the Interdepartmental Science Student Society. So in general, we represent over 32 departmental groups as well. So just so you guys know, I have included the full presentation in the agenda, but I'm only going to cover some of the new points that have been changed or stuff that we need to discuss with you guys since then. But I've kept everything in there for you guys to have as references, including the appendix and everything like that. So just for anyone who's new and maybe weren't there for the last time you presented, I'll just go over a quick introduction of what the ICE is. So in general, this year we're proposing a sci-fi fee, so a renewal of essentially our FAMF fee. So this we're proposing it's going to be a $5 fee that is going to be applied to all full-time and part-time undergraduate science students. So again, this has obviously some exclusions like students who are like in co-ops, for example, or, you know, stuff like that. That fee will also only be applied for the fall and winter semesters. So the spring and summer semesters, students won't have to pay a fee. This fee has been active since 2013. We did do a recent renewal in 2017, and as 4 years down the road, it's 2021, and we're here to do another renewal as well. Just so you guys know, there really hasn't been any changes to what we're proposing since 2017. It's the same amount. It has not increased. The same eligibility for students, the same term as well. We wanted to do it for 4 years as well. So nothing has changed since 2017 in terms of what we would like to propose for our fans. Just so you guys know, it also accounts for 78% of our revenue. So it is quite important for us that this pass. And historically, we've had very little opt-outs. If you have questions or you would like to know the specifics of our fee and who's going to be, you know, charged this fee, what is their opt-out mechanism, it's all in the agenda in our presentation. So I won't be going over that because I went over it last time. So I just kind of to recap a little bit of what you guys mentioned to us in our previous presentation, we definitely had some concerns about our consultation and the method of allocation, where our money is going. So in general, I'll just kind of go over what we had previously done in terms of consultation. So we had already met with different CASA groups. So again, CASA groups are the different science departmental groups within the ICE. So those are the 32 different groups that we help represent. So we actually did like meetings with them and we discussed our desire to pursue a FAMF referendum, discussed, you know, what are their thoughts, what are some things that we need to address going forward for the next 4 years. So we've held one-on-one meetings with them. We also did a semi-annual general meeting. So this is again with our CASA groups and open to science students in general as well. This is essentially just to get the CASA group support. We basically put it to a vote, you know, are our CASA group supportive of us pursuing the FAMF referendum, and you know, we had unanimous support there. We also did a faculty-wide survey. Survey results are in the presentation, but since I went over them last time, we're not going to go through it again. But we did do a faculty-wide survey. We asked pretty detailed questions on how our allocations are. We proposed, you know, that we're going to spend like this amount of money on this event and this amount of money on this service. And we kind of just got students' opinions on that. And we also had like open-ended questions about, you know, would they be willing to pay the sci-fi fee? What are some suggestions? What are some things that they like about the ICE? What are some recommendations that they had? So it was pretty comprehensive. Once we got our survey results, we also took those into account. We changed what we were proposing in terms of budgeting and allocation. And we then held like a town hall specifically for sci-fi. So again, it was open to all science students. They came in and they basically, we kind of just presented our changes, what we are newly proposing in terms of our allocations and our budgeting. So this is again, stuff that we've all previously done. I know there were some questions about increasing our consultation, which is totally fair. And no matter whether this FAMF proposal gets passed or not, the ICE was already planning on doing more consultation anyways. So the first thing we want to kind of cover to help address maybe increasing our consultation. I know it is a little late because you guys have to vote on it, but just know that this is going to be happening no matter whether the proposal gets passed or not. Even if it gets passed, we're still going to continue our consultation. So we're actually going to release a second survey in the first week of winter. And the reason for that is because a lot of the responders that we had in our first survey were first and second year students who obviously because of COVID weren't really on campus, didn't really get a chance to know like who the ICE is, what we do, what our services are to the full capacity that we actually do. So we thought it'd be a nice thing to see how that has changed once, you know, we've had a stronger activity within the campus for the last 4 months. So we're going to, again, also ask questions that address potential budget changes that you guys suggested. So a lot of that is specific to handbooks and instructor appreciation night. We have been getting feedback. After your guys' suggestions that we need to, you know, reassess how we allocate our money to those two services especially, we did actually gather a little bit more data since then. So we actually sent out kind of like a survey, not a survey, but an RSVP form for our winter edition handbooks. Because of popular demand, this year we decided to do winter edition. Normally we just do like a fall edition, which would go the full year. But in the winter, we decided to do some more handbooks and we had over 200 students RSVP saying that they wanted handbooks, which is statistically like historic, compared to like historical numbers, it's actually a lot. So you guys did have concerns that we were maybe spending a little bit too much on handbooks, but we think that just because of this overwhelming positive response that students have given us and, you know, the overwhelming number of RSVPs we've had, we think that, you know, going forward, we would like to ideally keep it at the $10,000 that we have proposed in terms of allocation. I know we also had some concerns about instructor appreciation night. So for those of you who aren't aware, it's a night where students can nominate TAs and professors. We have a kind of like a dinner banquet and awards ceremony where we present nominated profs with awards and students kind of give little speeches to them. It's a great networking event where students can kind of interact with profs not in a classroom setting, maybe build some connections that could help them. I don't know how many of you guys are in science, but at least for science, a lot of students are interested in research and networking is really important for that. So we generally find that instructor appreciation night, you know, it's not necessarily like students have voiced that they want less money spent on it, but they haven't voiced that they would like to get rid of it. We've also recently, actually in the last couple of days, had like 4 or 5 emails inquiring about instructor appreciation night as people would like to nominate their profs and TAs. So there definitely is demand for the event. So we kind of still think that we need to keep the event. Since we have incorporated, again, some of the students' feedback and decreased how much money we spend on it, but kind of just to address whether we should keep it or not, we are leaning towards keeping it because students have been voicing that they do like it and they would like to continue seeing this event. But yeah, in general, we're just kind of working on putting this other survey out, which is going to answer some of the other questions that you guys had raised. And we're just currently working with the faculty to improve the language to ensure that it's as partial as possible. So we're working on that as well. And then we're also going to do some more tabling to kind of share some information about what the FAMF fee is and what we do to get a general kind of sense about our budget allocations and ICE services. And the reason we want to do this is just because it allows for more open-ended conversation. We can kind of like probe a little deeper into people's thoughts and kind of ask a little bit more specific questions. So we are going to be doing that for at least 3 weeks in the upcoming semester. So those are basically methods in which we're increasing our future consultation. So that's kind of addressing that point. Another concern, I guess, we have is in terms of finances. So just to kind of go over what we're proposing, we are proposing to spend around 14% on CASA groups. So these are, again, science groups, and this is just, you know, giving them money for the different events that they hold, the different services, administrative costs, that sort of thing. Then we have the different events that we do, like orientation, graduation, instructor appreciation night, science week, that sort of stuff. Then we have academics and advocacy. A lot of this is scholarships. We kind of give out scholarships to science students, and there's been an overwhelmingly positive response towards the scholarships we already give, and there's a need for even more. Science students have kind of voiced that that's what they want more of, like by a lot, and so that's kind of why a significant portion of our budget is going there. And then we have our services. Much of that is handbooks, again, because that's our most popular service. And then just internal maintenance is like office stuff and printing and stuff like that. So before I kind of get into this, this is an issue that not our exec team has necessarily committed, but an exec team in the past, within the last 4 years since our last FAMF referendum. And our exec team, specifically myself, I kind of realized that there was an issue. So just in general, if you don't already know, all of us groups, faculty associations, have to submit audits for historically every semester to kind of show that, hey, this is what we've been spending our money on in the SU. So you guys would kind of like go through our expenses, maybe request receipts for stuff that were really large expenses, just to make sure that we're spending our money responsibly. So I actually realized that 2 years ago, back in the 2019-2020 year, the VPAF of that year actually did fail to mention how much money we spent on scholarships. So it was actually not included as a part of an audit, which is a huge concern, obviously, for in terms of financial transparency. So again, like, we really apologize for this. I know it's a huge issue. Again, like, this is not our current VPAF team, but I would like to shed some light kind of on the situation and what we're going to do going forward to make sure this doesn't happen again and what actions we've already taken, because, you know, we obviously don't want this to happen again. So just to kind of explain like why this occurred and why we failed to mention some spending on scholarships is because the scholarships that we gave out for the 2019-2020 year were given out April, so the very beginning of April. And I guess many of you might remember that that was when COVID started, and it was a lot of, you know, rapid transition online. There was a lot of uncertainty with what was going on with like school and our academics, and, you know, there was a really big change and shift in that. So that's part of the reason. But the main cause of this is because during that time, we actually had a rapid succession of VPAFs. So we had our VPAF for the 2019-2020 year. Then we had a second one come in for like about a month, but then he had to leave. And then I became VPAF after. So for the 2020 to 2021 year. And in that rapid succession, there was a little bit of miscommunication on what months you have to report for each audit. So basically, one of the VPAFs thought that for the 2019-2020 audit, the month of April would be considered for the spring-summer audit of 2020, not for the 2019-2020 year, and that's why it was not reported. So it was just a misunderstanding on what dates that we have to report for which audit, and so that's kind of why it was missed. It was not done with malicious intent or anything like that. It was a mistake. Just with the dates. So in terms of finances, we did fail to account for around 7,500 scholarships. And we are really dedicated to fixing this, and we want to make sure that this does not happen again. Since then, I was kind of VPAF after that. And I was VPAF for this past year, so the 2020 and 2021 year. I was in charge of the audits then, and it was completely successful. There was absolutely no issues. Everything was reported fine. We were financially transparent. All receipts, bank statements, everything was provided with no issues whatsoever. That year was also the year that I changed our accounting methods, how we keep track of our money, and that sort of thing. So this was kind of me just being proactive, knowing that we needed to update our system. So I didn't even know this issue had occurred, but I kind of just saw the way that we were doing things and recognized that we needed to improve it significantly. So I took those proactive measures to make sure that, you know, going forward, like stuff like this wasn't going to happen. So since then, we've actually updated the way we do our finances to make sure that, you know, we're keeping track of everything, that everything matches exactly with our bank statements, that we're keeping all receipts. So in terms of how we do this administratively, I've set it up in a way so that, you know, this mistake shouldn't happen again. And I kind of wanted to share with you a picture of how it goes down. For just, privacy reasons, I haven't included contact information of like who are we sending information out to, as well as, for example, like their names. So that is blocked out. That's not shown here. But in general, I just kind of want to show you just to make sure that, you know, to show you guys how much effort we really are putting into our finances to make sure this doesn't happen again. So in general, I usually like I record the date, which executive is spending the money, what was the purpose of it? Was it like an event, a service, that type of thing? We do a description of what the transaction was for, the method in which we do it. So because of COVID, sometimes we have to use e-transfer. And then, you know, are we sending this money out? Then we use this column to kind of show like this is how much money we're sending out, and if the amount is coming in, whether it was deposited or not, and then receipts and reimbursement forms. These numbers represent a folder that I have, and all the receipts are labeled with the following kind of numbers, and it basically shows you. It's essentially like a link to the receipt. So we keep all our receipts, we keep all of our transactions. And I just kind of wanted to show you that we've updated. And this is actually a system that is friendly for whoever comes after me, so that, you know, it doesn't use the normal accounting terms like debits and credits and really fancy terminology like allowances and stuff like some of the business students might know. I made it as friendly as possible for science students to understand, so that future VPAFs can use this system to ensure financial transparency, and they won't get confused or anything like that. So it's simplified, but you know, very detailed, very accountable as much as possible. So again, we're really keen on maintaining financial transparency. So we've already have, for example, our finance committee meetings up on our website, as well as our council meetings, as well as SAGEM meetings. SAGEM meetings specifically go through our finances, like, you know, how much money we have in the bank, how much we spend, that type of thing. So that's for our CASA groups as well. So currently we go through our monthly accounting and our banks, sorry, that should say bank statements, to make sure that, you know, everything matches month for month. And, you know, we understand that this, like, the situation the ICE is in. And again, it was just because of the full rotation of the VPs. Now, in order, I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, how we could have possibly, what we could now do, knowing our mistake, to fix it. So we've already talked to, you know, the audit committee, and we unfortunately cannot. There's really nothing we can do for a past mistake. We can only really ensure that it doesn't happen again. And so we've come up with a plan to make sure that, you know, this huge mistake doesn't happen. So I kind of want to go through that with you guys just to show that, you know, we are really committed. So besides all the changes we've already made to how we do our finances and stuff like that, kind of want to go through this. So in the first week of winter, we're actually going to form a constitution review committee. And we're going to, as the execs, we're basically going to suggest the following changes. So again, we have to share all financial documents with the president of VP services. These two are the ones who have controls to our bank, our banking system. Just know that these are things that we already do. They already have access to all our financial documents. We already hold monthly meetings. We just want to really solidify this and put it into our constitution because it previously wasn't. And we thought that it was probably necessary. So again, these are things that we kind of already do, but we want to really solidify this. So again, sharing all our financial documents with the president and the VP services. And as a group of the three execs, we're going to do mandatory monthly meetings. So we're going to go through all our transactions, make sure we have all our receipts, stuff like that. Again, already something that we do. And then I'm going to add something and produce a very detailed procedural document for whoever is incoming after me, because I want to make sure that whoever follows me also has the ability and to, you know, keep up this proper financial accounting stuff. So I'm actually going to pull information from the finance module of GLOW. So, you know, this is a module that we have to do that the Students' Union puts out, and it has already a great amount of content for sure. I learned a lot from it. So I'm going to pull information from that, put it into a document so it's much more accessible, and then also kind of include some of my own information that I've learned. And then we're going to basically form this review committee. We're going to present these changes to the ICE Council and vote on it, and also present it to SAGEM for a vote. So that's kind of the procedure that we have outlined in our constitution for any changes we want to make. And then that will basically lead to a constitution. So going forward, that's what we were planning on doing. One of the other things that isn't mentioned here that I was actually going to do is I noticed that you guys also have a shadowing kind of program thing with the execs. So you get to come in, shadow the execs, I think, for a little bit if you're looking or you're keen on, you know, maybe taking on the position next year. And I thought it was a great idea. So whoever comes after me, whoever's voted in, I'll essentially have a kind of like a shadowing period with me. So as soon as they're voted in, I'm not going to obviously immediately transfer over authority because that happens April 30th. So since the vote till April 30th, we have a good month and a half. And I was thinking that, you know, we're going to institute this thing where the incoming VPAF will shadow me. I'll go through kind of how we do our finances. It'll be like a 2-hour commitment, like a week, maybe. It won't be much, but it'll highlight some of the really important things that I do in terms of financial transparency and accounting, some of the stuff that can get really confusing, but are really, really important for our organization. So I'm going to kind of set that up with whoever comes after me to ensure that this doesn't happen. But yeah, that's kind of some of the stuff that we have. I know this is a really heavy and really serious issue. And, you know, going forward, I'd like to do whatever possible to make sure this doesn't happen again. So I'm open to any questions, but in general, I just wanted to say that, you know, this isn't a mistake we can necessarily fix. So I know, like, for example, if we don't get passed for FAMP this year, I understand. It's just that, you know, even the next year, this problem is going to persist. And since there's nothing we can do about it, we can only really take action to make sure it doesn't happen again. I'm going to stop screen sharing so I can see your questions.
Can you guys online hear me?
Yeah.
Fabulous. Okay. So we have a couple of questions from the floor. You guys please do your best to please turn your mics on to me so that they can hear us from here. I'm going to start with Councillor Batiki and then go with Councillor Dillard and then Councillor Adavialius on the other side. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can you hear me online?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. Can you just walk through where the 7,500 number came from? Because I was looking at your at the audit that you said was you accounted for these scholarships on, which was the one after, and that does indeed have scholarships for April 2021, but the number is actually 10 grand. So can you just walk through where the 7,500 came from? Thank you.
Like for the 2019 audit?
No, the 2021. Because you said that you didn't count April in the 2019-2020. So I'm looking at the 2020-2021 to see if that's accounted for, but the number is different.
Oh yeah. So the number is different because that includes the scholarships that were kind of given out for the 2020. So the 2020 to the 2021 year, but we didn't include the scholarships from the 2019-2020 year because we thought it was already accounted for. And the reason that number is actually different is because that year of the 2020-2021, we actually didn't give out $7,500 in scholarships. I think we gave out a little bit more. I think it was 10,000 that we gave out around-ish. So that's why there's a little difference there. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so just to clarify, the number isn't on either audit. It's not on the one that was missed and then it wasn't put on the one after.
Yes. So again, just to kind of clarify, so the person who was doing the 2019-2020 audit thought that it would go on the 2020-21 audit, and then the person who did the 2020-21 audit thought it would go on the year before. So that was kind of like the confusion.
Okay. Well, thank you for your question. Councillor Dillon, go ahead.
Yeah, so I've had the opportunity to talk to Brianne quite a bit about this over the last few weeks. So I wanted to bring a little bit of context to two of the elements that she's kind of discussing. One is obviously audit related and the other is the governance related. So in regards to obviously the audit report, that mistake was made, of course. But from our discussions, it does seem that it was merely a mistake rather than an indication of expansion of funds. And I mean, like, I do think that them including one, the accountability measure, and then also how they're going to improve transparency is like a really good way for them to kind of, you know, ensure this doesn't happen again. But one clarification I would make is, so obviously we have discussed that there's currently no regressions we can do at this time because audit has never done retroactive punishment as of right now. But this is something that we've obviously been talking about with the governance. Pretty sure because situations like this have occurred quite a bit recently. So at the moment, the only thing they can do is to commit to this not happening again. But obviously in the future, we want there to be more than just a word. So, you know, on that end, we are working to ensure that there are greater accountability measures on the SU side. And then beyond that, I wouldn't argue it's entirely every SRE's fault that there have been a lot of audit mistakes, because as many of you know that have been on council before, there's been a lot of overturns in audit and there's been a lot of problems on audit. So SREs and DPS have not been given the support that they require to be successful in their roles. So although this is a large mistake, I'd argue, there is a little bit of bonus on such as well to have not been able to do a good job. So yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Thank you, Rhea.
Thank you.
Fabulous comment from the chair of audit. That's so yeah. You want to be on speaker list? Okay, I'm just gonna yell because I don't know what the hell's going on.
Hello.
Is hold on. I think
then current execs on what the allocations are and how they should spend it, because I feel like it's valuable for every exec on the team to have that discussion with the sorry, I'm just trying to find out what your position is. VPAF, yeah. So I guess I'm just suggesting that instead of just the future VPAF, having those conversations with all execs on board is important, because obviously whatever the funds are allocated for, each exec is going to have a part in each of those allocations and how that's spent. So just a suggestion to kind of have that discussion with all execs and not just your like the person who's going to take your position next year. But yeah. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, but I think because I think you're muted for a little bit in the beginning. I just want to clarify that I understood your comment correctly. So were you suggesting essentially that all of our allocations and the way we spend our money should be discussed with all executives before, right?
Well, kind of. But I guess you were talking about how like the audit can be confusing, and then the person who takes your role next year will need some kind of like shadowing more knowledge since you've been in the role. I was just suggesting that this could be done for all execs, just because it's sort of collaborative, and not only the VPAS does everything, because whatever you've allocated for, that's like on different levels. So everyone on the exec team is obviously going to interact and kind of get involved in how these funds are actually going to be spent. So for example, scholarships, when people send in their application and there's someone else who's reading those applications, I think it helps them see the value in that application and how much money they're actually going to allocate for that person. So I guess it just helps with the whole team, just because the entire thing runs on these funds. So yeah, it was just a suggestion.
Okay, yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for clarifying your comment. We really appreciate it. And I'll take that feedback back to the ICE Council so we can discuss it. Thank you.
All right, Councilor Beasley, go ahead.
Thanks so much for the presentation, Maria. I just had a couple questions. The first one was on timing. So you mentioned this was like an issue of not reporting these scholarships that had like been dispersed during April of that given year. Were there any other spending that happened during that month, and was that spending reported or not?
Typically, we don't actually have any spending in that month, just because it is exam season. So I did go through a bank statement, and we didn't really have anything else. We actually just had like incoming money, like for example, if students like purchased I don't know, used their printing services or something. So there was no spending. There was just a little bit of inflow. But yeah, because it's exam season and stuff like that, we don't see anything.
Was that income then reported on the audit?
Pardon, I couldn't hear your question.
Was that income during the month of April that's reported on the audit?
I think so, yes, yeah.
My question is, when was this error found?
Oh, this error was found, I want to say, I think around 2 weeks ago when the chair of audit committee kind of sent us our audit because we wanted to make our FAMP presentation. But at that point, we didn't have all of the kind of the, we didn't actually understand anything of the situation. We just found the error. So we need to do a little digging about who was involved, why did this error occur? So we kind of gathered this information. And then as soon as we had it and it was ready to present, we presented it to you guys, but around 2 weeks ago, I'd say.
I do want to say, I'm so sorry to point this out, but like I was a faculty association BPF at one point, I filled out an audit as well. And I think that audits are incredibly difficult. And I think someone also made great points as to why they're structurally difficult to fulfill, especially during a pandemic year. I still think this gives me a lot of cause for concern. Bank statements need to line up with what's on the audits, particularly if you're letting me know that there was things in April that did end up on either the summer or the like school year audits during that term. Then this seems just a really just evidence of even if it's structural incompetence caused by just lack of access to information, a pretty scary example of it. While I'm sympathetic to your plight, every BPF needs to do the work of checking those bank statements, making sure that what's on there, even when you took your term and submitted audits for the 2020-2021 year, I imagine you went back and checked the 2019 audits, and I'm surprised that you didn't find it then either. And I say those things not to be hurtful or to be cruel, just that these are thousands and thousands of dollars of students' money, and the only reason why we're granted the ability by the provincial government and by legislation to be able to pass out this money to student associations is also that we hold these students associations to high standards to avoid things that have happened in the past. Faculty associations have had huge instances of fraud. I think faculty association BP ran off with $7,000 worth of money at some point. And so to be very frank, this relationship is built on trust. And I mentioned this to other people going through this process. But my role as a counselor, and I think the role of all the counselors, is to make sure that you guys have the financial controls in place to handle this amount of money, and that we trust that those are going to be able to be done properly. And right now, just to be frank, I'm not sure if I can trust this, given that and I'm really appreciative that you guys are putting all the financial controls in now, or that you are doing that work. But you also, and this is because you found it 2 weeks ago, don't have the ability to demonstrate to us yet that you've used those financial controls effectively or that they work for a year. So I'm just saying, that I am sad that this is the situation, but I also understand how difficult it is to fill out these audits. But thank you, Rhea, anyway, for your presentation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for your comments, first of all. I definitely agree with you. It's a huge concern that we had this issue, and it should not happen. We are trusted with, the money from thousands of students, and this is not something that we should be taking lightly. Again, I just want to kind of maybe clarify some things. Our bank statements did match. It wasn't really a matter of that we left certain things out in the bank statements. It was more of just there was a misunderstanding on where the month of April went, for which audit. And it was more just kind of that. It wasn't necessarily our bank statements were matching, but yes, I completely understand what you're saying. And I definitely agree that, it's very short time to show that, these controls have been working. I will say that I did mention that some of these things we were already doing, and I've actually been, this is my second year as BPAF. So we've actually already been doing these controls since I think June 2020 when I became BPAF. So it's actually been working since June till now. And since June, I've also already submitted about three audits with the Students' Union for spring and summer 2020, fall 2020, and winter 2021, and those haven't had an issue. So we have been putting those kind of, we've been using those controls, financial controls, and they have been working since then. The only thing that we haven't been able to kind of test out is the whole shadowing thing, and that's just because no one has come after me yet. But yeah, thank you for your questions, and I hope that maybe clarifies a little bit of stuff for you.
All right, we will give, please forgive me for this, we will give Vice President Montero the last position on the speaker's list, just because we've spent more than half an hour on this presentation. And I see Councillor Veloso, so the new entrance to the speaker's list. Just because, you know, once again, it's kind of, we did start late, and we have been extending a little bit on our time. So go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thanks for the presentation. My question was, if you might have touched on a little bit, but just to clarify, so the money that wasn't reported, it was just not reported in the audit. So is that what you're saying? Because my question is that was the money accounted for on your bank statements and as part of your budget, or and just not reported on the audit, or is it just not accounted for anywhere?
No, it was accounted for our budget. It's all in our bank statements. It was all done. We just didn't include it in our audit. So yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Veloso.
Sorry, thank you again for coming once again to council. I did have sort of like two questions specifically. What I thought was sort of a little scary to me was that some of the things were included from like sort of like your April spending and like your bank statements, and some of it wasn't, which is a little bit, but I know you aren't like doing better and sort of trying to fix that and doing sort of putting forward other things that sort of will make your financial statements look better in the future. But I think it's just like, I don't know why like that was missed, just because we're having such a large sum of money in your bank account, not matching sort of like previous audits. So the second point was, I know you mentioned that you'll be putting sort of like shadow days when the next BPAS will, I guess, for the next term. And my question was there already like not any transitions sort of like either processes or documents in place before that? Because I think in terms especially of the BPAF role or any FA organization, really transition documents are incredibly important and making sure that the firm taking over your role knows what they're doing. So sort of what has been, so if you're only doing the shadow thing now, what has been your transition processes in the past?
Okay, yeah, thank you for your question. I guess the first one, I think it must have been a misunderstanding because nothing from our April bank report was stated, like it was just entirely missing. It wasn't that we selectively like reported certain things and not the other. So I think I may have either missaid something or misunderstood a question or replied incorrectly. But just to clarify, nothing from our April bank statement was actually reported, just because the month as a whole, there was just kind of a little misplacement as to, or a misunderstanding as to which audit to report in. So just to address that question, because I think you mentioned that I may have made it seem that we reported some things and then not the others, like the scholarships, but that wasn't the case. So just kind of to address that. And then the second thing you mentioned was about transition. We already do have extensive transition documents. For example, mine, I think, was around like 30, 40 pages. So it is quite extensive. We do have meetings with the ongoing execs, between the outgoing and incoming executives. So we do have that in place. However, it's kind of hard to learn these things just from a document or through like, a couple meetings, because it's the way with financing works is that it's a process. It's very, it's a process that you have to learn, and those things are learned best when you actually do them. You see someone kind of doing it as themselves rather than just kind of like telling you, kind of lecturing you. And I think that that's what was really missing in our transition, that there wasn't enough hands-on learning. It was a lot of like lecturing, having a document, having notes, which while they are extensive and quite informative, it's just not the same as seeing someone getting the really fine tuning or the things that are really like implicit that you don't necessarily realize off the bat that, you know, this is how I should do things. So I think that shadowing period was more to address those types of transitions, while we do have, you know, actual meetings and extensive documents present in order to, you know, help the incoming execs. But I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you so much. I just sort of, in terms of like missing a whole month's worth of sort of bank statements in the audit, is very, because I'm also on the committee and it's sort of my second year on the committee. And it's just the process gives a lot of trust in FAs and just sort of having that relationship between council and all the faculty associations that handle students' money. And it's sort of like not having like that trust sort of is a little like hard for me to sort of like grasp. Just because we can't now sort of hard to like trust organizations that have sort of a history of doing that in the past, and just like not having people sort of double check that, because we don't just trust you to put everything on the audit. We have no way of actually figuring out if you're saying the truth or not. I know we're sort of like trying to make some edits in regards to the audit process and kind of like sort of tackle that issue. But I just think I'm like a little wary about that specific thing. But
yeah, no. Yeah, just kind of, I guess, kind of talk a little bit about that. In the 2019-2020 year, I believe the way audits worked is that they didn't actually require bank statements from us. So as you were saying, it's a lot of trust. You guys just had to kind of trust that what we were reporting is what we spent. But since then, in your 2020 year, you guys have actually made it a lot better, a lot more, I guess we want to say strict. I don't know what the word is right now. I'm blanking out on it, but very comprehensive. You guys asked for our bank statements now as well. So I think that was probably another reason why we kind of missed that as well. But yeah, thank you so much. And I understand the trust is definitely not there anymore. And we recognize that.
All right. So since we have a motion put forward to extend by 10 minutes, we'll allow the remaining speakers on the list to place their questions forward. Please do keep them abrupt. I think this matter is something that needs to be ironed out as much as possible. And so I will be extending as much as we need to in order to get this, get all questions put forward. So, Councillor Dillon.
Yeah, okay, so I just want to clarify this question a little bit because I think that it's important. So I would argue that this is not a situation of financial mismanagement, but more of a reporting mistake that wouldn't have been picked up on if it weren't for our discussion. If anything, this should open our eyes as counselors to how easy it is for our money to go unaccounted for. Now, our offices have been flawed. And that brings me to my next point. I do disagree with Councillor Beasley and Councillor Beloso. We did not ask for bank statements. We literally just started. So this has happened to one SRA, but if we go back to review every single one in the last how many audit years, there could be a lot more of these mistakes that we wanted to pick up on. So obviously as audit, the reason why, so yeah, we did find this 2 weeks ago and Bri and I we've been talking a lot since then. The reason why it did not first presentation was because as audit, we wanted to find ways that we could fix it moving forward. And from audit's end, we will be requesting bank statements to ensure receipts do match. And we are hoping to transition into a state where all receipts should be accounted for, because it doesn't make sense for three receipts to be the only necessary reporting measures for us to give you thousands of dollars. So although this is a mistake on the part of ICE, it was a reporting mistake that could have very easily been done by any SRA, and probably have been done by many other SRAs in the last years, because we have not equipped them with the tools necessary to report properly. So like Rihanna said, I think it's really great that she's taking accountability for this. And I think that it's even better that they have a plan to be successful and move forward and be more transparent. But I do think there's a huge onus on us, because we created a situation where this could very easily happen and probably has happened with other SRAs. So I do think this has been a contentious thing in audit committee. I'm sure Andrew's going to talk about this next. But this is where I said, yeah.
All right. And I will move to Councilor Batiki.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to echo Councilor Beasley and Councilor Veloso's points. This is obviously a very, very serious issue. And at the end of the day, like the audit process does have its flaws. But this is not a problem that is audit committee's fault. This is a problem that has to do with the fact that like an SRA didn't include spending on an audit, which at the point in audit committee like time in 2019-2020, we had no way of checking. So this is obviously very, very serious. And sorry, I'm just trying to get all my thoughts together quickly because I want this to be quick. I know we'll move on. So I'll just finish and say, can you make the bank statements from April 2020, I believe it was, available to all of audit committee? Because I personally, like as a member of audit committee, am still very confused about what exactly the amount of money that was misreported was, because when we talk about this in audit, the number was $9,000 and now it's down to $7,500. And so even now, like while I know that you're looking at the bank statements and stuff, I'm still not convinced that there's appropriate financial management given the way this number is changing. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, I think you may already have our bank statements, but I'll pull all of them from our end, and I think I'll send it to Simran, who's the chair of the audit, so you guys can have that for your discussion. But thank you for bringing that up.
Councillor Beasley, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I have a follow-up. This is just in relation to Councillor Veloso's question. Yeah, so sorry, I don't think I phrased my question about like the income and other election expenditures for the month of April and whether they were on any audit. Just because you clarified with Councillor Veloso that like nothing, no expenditures for the month of April were on any audits, which is my bad. I might have phrased that question wrong. But I just want to confirm, is your income from the month of April on any audit right now?
No. So basically any income or any spending that we got in April, it wasn't recorded because just the entire month was not recorded. So yeah, we were missing the entire month, and that includes our income, any that we made, and any spending besides the $7,000 in the scholarship, if we had any.
The other thing that I wanted to add, and Rhea, I'm not necessarily directing this to you, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, I guess. It's like, well, I 100% agree with Simran and the comments that Simran has made about like, yes, you not having equipped SRAs properly with the tools to be able to build these audits. I do think we need to draw a line with like what BPFs are still responsible for, like even in a world where they're not equipped with the right tools kind of thing. And it's my personal opinion, and potentially this is something that comes from like me having the audit that I did was also liquid at that time, that there were enough pathways and opportunities for the BPF at the time to, for instance, like reach out and confirm whether April should be included in that audit or not, or incumbent upon the next BPF to review past audits when they're making the next one, meaning that like the mistake should have been caught sooner. And like I know as well that this is a report, like a reporting mistake, and I 100% agree with Simran, and I hear you, Rhea, but like there's no malignance in this whatsoever. No money, no one absconded, no one had a holiday, no one bought 35,000 junior chickens. But this is still, I think, something that like this is a degree of like in incompetence, not by you, but by the organization and the structures that were present, that I think still gives me cause for concern. And I guess directing that to you more as a statement to see your thoughts on it, I guess, because I think that's going to be like a large part of the conversation that we're going to have when it comes to like approving ISIS FAM.
Yeah, so I completely agree that at the end of the day, even though there were, you know, like structural issues and our organizational structure and how we conduct our finances, and there was a little bit of, you know, like you guys maybe didn't ask for bank statements, but you know, that's not your fault. That at the end of the day is our fault, because you know, we are required to you know, baseline, provide everything that we've spent money on, it is still our responsibility to make sure it happens at the end of the day. I completely agree that the previous VPAF, who was in charge of the audit, should probably have reached out. I was actually researching this a little bit myself just to make sure that, you know, maybe I didn't make the mistake. But yeah, there's documentation online that confirms that, you know, from the audit committee, like the emails and stuff like that, you can easily ask the audit committee chair to kind of ask what time frame to use and stuff like that. So I completely agree with you. I definitely think it's the fault of our organization because, you know, we're responsible for this. You guys weren't really responsible for making sure we report it. It's our actions. It's our reporting at the end of the day. So I agree with what you said there for sure.
Thank you so much for your story. I appreciate that. And just to add as well, just know there's been some back and forth on it. I believe even though audit didn't require bank statements, the FAs were known to were supposed to provide them upon request. But thank you though, I really appreciate it. Sorry, also that my line of questioning is not the easiest. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no. I guess I'm speaking on behalf of the ICE right now. We know it's a really difficult situation. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of back and forth going to be. I think you guys are probably going to have to debate this a lot as well. And, I apologize for this in advance, but we really appreciate the kind of work that you're putting in with us. So thank you for that.
Councilor Moore, just before you go, Councilor Dillon had a response to give. Go ahead.
It's entirely a response, but I want to bring your attention to something that I feel like will verify my point a little bit more. So this was the game plan for audit this year. This is how the audits were not done. So if you look at all the reds, that's all the reds are audits that weren't done. So as you can see, all the winter audits from last year were not accomplished. And then you're showing out of you. I do think that this is not only this is a mistake on their end. This is also a huge blind spot for how we've been managing finances over the last how many years. So I do think this is a huge learning rock responsibility for us. And like, I know that we're going to be voting on this in the new year, but I do want to show that second side of it because, yeah, there's a lot of transparency due to a mistake. I would argue it's a mistake just because of the conversations we've been having and our bank statements upon request did reinforce what they had discussed. But there has been a lack of responsibility for audit for so many years. So keep that in mind when you're voting.
Okay, Councilor Morris, go ahead.
Well, do this a bit of context as to the positionality that I'm coming with this to this question from. I'm the Vice President External of the Education Student Association, and I have had to, you know, look over my term. I'm also a member of audit committee, and I have been doing audits for the last 8-ish months. Oh my God, it's been months, sorry. And I'm wondering if you would be able to check for me if anybody had reached out to clarify if April was a month with zero expenditures or zero income, because I had to do that during my time with audits communicating with FAs. So this is probably not to be an answer that we'll have to get later on, but if you could please check the VPF email and see if there was any clarification asked, I would really appreciate that.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I'll definitely look into that. And I think I'll forward whatever I find to Simran, who can present it to the audit committee. Is that okay? Or would you like a direct email?
You can send it to Simran, and Simran can send it to me, but it might be a bit extra work for Simran, but okay. Whatever works for you.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
President Lee.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Speaker. Just really quickly on how we address these kinds of small financial mistakes. So obviously it's not small financially, but I think that it is clear that while clearly something went very wrong and multiple people were responsible, at the end of the day, ICE has been transparent. They immediately came to us and explained what the mistake was, and they've taken steps to make sure this never happens again. And I think we should think about how we treat SRAs in that situation. I don't think we want to create a culture where we are punitive towards people who come to us with their mistakes and try to make them right. What that actually does is it creates a disincentive for these groups to come to us and be honest about what has gone wrong. And I think that Given that, and given that I'm pretty satisfied with what the insurance doesn't happen again, while it's a concern, I'm glad you discussed it, I think we can consider the matter put to rest. That being said, I do think, with the exception of a few interesting details, the conversation has become pretty circular, and we should probably, without speaking with Spear, move to the next item. So I don't think we have to vote on that, but I think we should probably keep on talking. Thank you very much. I don't have a question, but thank you for being here.
Okay. Just before we end, I just want to say thank you for everyone's comments and concerns and, you know, being understanding in general. So thank you on behalf of the ICE.
All right. Thank you once again, everybody. So I want to be very open with all of you about how a lot of these processes go. When it comes to our presentations, we technically have 15 minutes to be able to get through everything. The way we've been doing it has been to be able to encourage more space and, you know, have more open conversations in the way we discuss. My role in and of itself is to be able to facilitate these conversations and at the same time be careful to not stifle anybody when it comes to questions. What President Lee has done is good to be able to keep us in line and seeing how the conversation is going. But I do hope as we continue and we move forward, we can be able to recognize, yes, you know, time is running and a lot of things are difficult, but it's important to be able to have everybody speak as much as can be put to the table so as to allow that all information be put to this. Because for, personally, as someone that's not on the audit committee, all of this is something that isn't obviously clear to me. And so I'd imagine that this is the same for others that are not part of this committee as well. All right. So I still, once again, please do bear with me when we have these extensions coming forward. Everybody's tired and has had a long day, long week, long semester. But it's important for us to give everybody the platform to speak on matters, especially when it comes to dealing with the finances of an entire student representative association. So with that, we're going to move to, it's 7:36. I am suggesting we have an intermission right here. And then come back and continue with the other pieces on our agenda, and then hopefully end out this lovely semester. Okay, so I'm going to go through. Is there anyone objected to that? No? Alrighty, cool. President Lee, Vice President Montero, Vice President Forte, Vice President Kimani, Vice President Dixit, Governor Conrad, Councilor Taha. Do go ahead and just type it in the chat and we'll be able to see it as well. Councilor Vaughan, Councilor Corfe.
Here.
Councilor Yabut.
Here.
Councilor Avila. Okay, Councillor Villoso. Councillor Kaur?
Here.
Councillor Beasley. Councillor Amar?
Here.
Councillor Gardner. Councillor Morris? Councillor Matoska. Councillor Ulett or Councillor Ulett proxy? Councillor Thakur. Councillor Kara? Councillor Kukan. Councillor Batiki. Councillor Zafar. Councillor De Prato. Councillor Gill. Councillor Chopra. Okay. All right. Oh, okay, no worries. Councillor Brownvine. Thank you. We have Councillor Lala.
Here.
Okay. Councillor Sivakumaran. Councillor Barzesh. Councillor Dillon. Councillor Ayola. Okay. Mr. Dumashow.
I'm here.
Lovely. All righty. So it's 7:36. We're going to take a quick intermission for 15 minutes and return at 7:51.
Hello? Can you hear us? Hello? Hello, can you hear us? Okay, well, yes, you can hear us, sorry.
I like SC7 parts better.
Oh, it's on now. It wasn't on before.
It's kind of my
That's why I'm asking if people. Also, tomorrow I get back my time upgrade. I get back my time.
I'm
ready.
Hello. Can you hear that?
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
well, right?
Everyone on the.
I just. So that means they can also see us from that camera too, Philip.
Yeah, I'm trying to turn it on.
And then,
Yeah, I would have
been. I was like,
just for the
last,
at least it is fine.
Hello. Hello. Sounds to me. So the sound is working.
Hey, Thomas, how's being a law student? Did you survive your midterms?
Oh, no, they're happening now. I did one yesterday, and I have four remaining, so.
All right, well, you're going to kick those four midterms, but kill it.
Yeah, we'll see. You don't know until you get your mark back. The first one, I think, went well, but,
not against it. Is there anything maybe people want to raise to put through? I guess
we could say like anyone who has a specific thing they want to raise in their committee report.
Can you the other way?
But, yeah, that's up to you mostly, but I
you can probably get to them very quickly, like 30 seconds if you need a report, otherwise you'll report.
Yeah, it's just we're talking about the acceptance
of the closed,
right? Notes to everyone and they'll need to actually be able to reach them before we can even start the conversation. So it'll take a while.
Okay.
Yeah. And when we get there, we'll need to do you know how to send things into the box in confidential mode?
Yes,
Kate, can I share the two documents with you?
Yeah.
Okay. So share them with everyone.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll do that right now.
All right.
I
guess we're gonna get.
Can I go check on them and see if they're eating fast or if they're taking their time?
Let's see if we have just from the. Sure.
Oh, I love curry.
Okay, so we'll get started.
I'm done.
Yes. Yes. I think Abra is just checking to see what the status is on the consumption over there that's taking place over there. So we'll begin with our executive committee
reports. They're all in the club. Okay.
We will, I suppose, have.
You're talking about this.
I suppose we'll have Vice President Dixon going first. If there's anything that you'd like to add, please do go ahead.
Can we wait until
they're taking place?
They're all in the call virtually right now.
They're sitting outside the eat.
Oh, I can face. I'm just wondering. Okay, so hello, Council. I want to start off my report today by speaking about bit of a sensitive topic on behalf of the rest of the exec team. So for those of you who have seen, we are aware of the posts that have been made about one of the members of our council, Paul Gretzky Conrad, and we are taking these posts very, very seriously and taking the steps necessary to address the situation properly. That means that while we are addressing the situation with urgency, we are also taking the time that it takes to properly address a situation of this nature and give it the care and attention that it deserves. What I can say for now is that I have reached out to the poster to offer support to the survivor and learn more about the situation. I have also reached out to the Sexual Assault Center because while I have quite a bit of knowledge in this area, they are experts and I'm going to be looking for their guidance on what to do, not only for the situation, but for our community. I just want everyone to know that we're going to be treating this accusation with the same intensity and in the same way as we would treat any other accusation. It's no different because it's somebody that we all know. That means that we are taking a survivor-centered approach and that we will be respecting their privacy and wishes as we move forward with this. And that also means that we all have to be patient in addressing the situation and that I might not be able to share everything that I know with you, but I can assure you that we are doing everything that we can to deal with the situation in a good way that prioritizes those impacted, the survivor and our community first and foremost above everything. So if you have any questions about that, I'd be happy to answer them. But I think because of how sensitive the situation is, a lot of it might be best dealt kind of on a one-on-one basis because this is a public meeting. But of course, I don't want to shut down any of the comments, just as kind of like a note. Now moving on to the rest of my report, and you know, I guess kind of transitioning into a related topic. We have, as of today, finished the hiring committee meetings for the sexual assault prevention coordinator. They went really well, and I am not able to tell you anything about those meetings because they are all confidential, but I'm really excited about the person who I think will be the next who will fill this position. We have also met with the provost and got updates about their response to our letter. And excitingly, that means that we're sitting on a planning committee for the new training that the university is hoping to develop. The Sexual Assault Center will also be working with residents, hopefully, to improve a lot of their training programs, along with many other updates that you can read about in my report that I mentioned last meeting. With Indigenous Celebration Week, on a more light and happy note, the planning is going wonderfully. I'm going to send a message to the council chat in just a bit because volunteer registration has opened and if anybody has the capacity to volunteer, I would actually really appreciate that. We also have a draft schedule up. We are still beefing up, for lack of a better term, the schedule and confirming some of the details with a few of the speakers, but the things that are in there are confirmed to be happening at those times. So I really hope everybody can make it out even if they can't volunteer. And yeah, that's where I'll leave it for my report. I have lots of other stuff about a new mental health initiative in residence, as well as providing naloxone kits on campus, but I've gone for far too long now. So I will pass it off. And thanks.
Thank you very much, Vice President Dixon. I will move forward to Vice President Kimani.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Hope you're doing well, surviving finals and assignments. So in my council report, I kind of gave a brief overview of all the things that I did this semester, but I will touch on two things because they've been seeing new additions instead. So for Black History Month, things are in full swing in terms of planning. So I have been filming the Black History Month series over the past few weeks. I'm filming the last few episodes next week and sending those off to our marketing department so they can make it look all fancy. I realized that I never mentioned the name of the series last time, but I'm just going to keep that a secret. So, you know, move the suspense and you'll be shocked when we release it. The Violet King Award is going well, so it was ratified by the Finance Committee a few weeks ago, and I'm just adding the last few details in terms of the award description. We figured out how the award would be adjudicated, and so all of that is done. And lastly, in terms of Black History Month, I was looking for a way to incorporate Black students in this conversation, because obviously I think it's very important to include as many Black students as possible. So I've reached out to a few Black students across campus and have asked them to answer a few questions about their experience as a Black student here at the U of A, how much their identity plays into that experience. I asked them to record their answers in a video form, and we'll be compiling all their answers and making a video. Not really sure when it will be released in the month of February, but I will keep y'all updated. And the last thing I want to touch on is the bulk foods initiative. So we will be doing a soft launch probably in the first week of January, but we will officially be launching the bulk food section in mid-January. We have the list of items that we'll be offering secured already. The only thing I'll tell you is that there will be chocolate covered almonds. So be excited. We're just in the process of securing the actual containers that we'll be putting the bulk foods in, and the scales and all the other logistics like that, but things are looking good. And we're also working on our marketing materials that need to go into summer and our campaign. But I will update you all as we continue to do that. But that's all for me.
Thank you so much, Vice President Kimani, for keeping us up to date on what's going on in your world. Vice President Fote, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I come this evening with some sadness, so I'll start my report by saying that the University of Calgary students union voted to leave college last Tuesday. We're sad to see them leave, and we understand and agree that there are areas within college that could be improved. Which is why college is undergoing under organizational review. However, we would have hoped that UCSU waited for the outcome of that review before making that decision. UCSU believes that they could get more out of the more value out of their money by hiring an additional staffer to work on their columns. But I think the general vision between President Lee and I is that an additional hire would provide the same value that, you know, on services that college offers in terms of large numbers, and also understanding the practicality of, you know, the United Voice and Perspective movement. Ultimately, it is up to their organization and their members to decide what is best for them and to decide what the right approach is for their organization. But we believe that a United Student Movement in Alberta is what helps get results and it's what makes our advocacy more efficient. And what we need, especially when dealing with a government that has made up saving cuts of our PSU system. As well, college has accomplished many things in the past, such as the college white paper on campus sexual violence, which was a collaborative member-driven project that had led to a conversation in Alberta around campus sexual violence. Also, the college Alberta 2030 submission and participation review led to material changes in the recommendations, particularly regarding student financial aid and granting. I would also mention the idea of the Alberta Student Congress, which was a collaboration between Alberta Students Executive Council as well as ABGPAC, and this initiative brought together thousands of students from all over the province, you know, provide their input and really make sure that, you know, our advocacy is student-driven. So again, we are unfortunate that that UCSU made that decision, but we respect it nonetheless. The other sad news I have, better to be more than sad, is that the executive director of CASA has formally submitted their letter of resignation as executive director effective December 24th. They received a really cool job offer, which they couldn't turn down, but there is no reason to press the panic button. This is a place that CASA has faced before. Some of you may remember when former VP External Adam Brown was chair of CASA, and something similar did happen. But organizationally, CASA has more systems and structure that gives it smoother transition than what it did last time. Other than these issues that have arisen, I've mostly been occupied with some projects, such as being able to organize a mixer for the End of Consumer Alliance and this inaugural city council. So that's my week. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Vice President Fotang, and good luck on in the search for the new positions. Vice President Montero.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So similar to commending what I've done for my report for the last 2 weeks, is I've decided to put a list of all the projects I've been working on, update you all on the progress of them. Quite a few of them being completed, which I'm very excited about, but I'm going to focus on four different items today. So the first one is, I hope all of you have seen the message that I sent you in the council group chat. It's about the Alberta Student Leadership Summit. For all of you who don't know, ASLS is a 4-day virtual and in-person event that's held for both students that are in both secondary and high school from across the world to be able to attend. And it's basically meant to be a space for students at varying levels to learn about leadership. And there's four different areas that ASLS typically focuses on: sustainability, community organizing, governance, and leadership fundamentals. And this year, the theme is Sustaining Momentum, which poses the question of why do we as leaders keep engaging in leadership? So I just wanted to flag for all of you, let you know that tickets are open for people to be able to register. I have the links during the council group chat, so please share those links. Please share the graphics that are currently on the UASU Instagram. And also, the ASLS Planning Committee has expressed to me that they really love to have a panel about student governance. I know Councillor Beasley has reached out to me expressing interest and wanting to be a part of it, but I would highly encourage any of you, whether you're on GFC or the Faculty Association, Students Council, if you want to be a part of this panel, it's going to be a good opportunity to speak to upcoming student leaders, both at a very young age and also at our age, to share your perspectives and thoughts on why you are still leadership. The last three other things are in my report. First is the Zero Textbook Cost Indicator Program. The program, I've added an updated number here because I did a slight miscalculation of about $1.5 million, but we rounded up the number and finalized it. So this semester alone, with the number of courses that have been enrolled in CTC, we're estimating that due to teaching CTC, we're saving roughly students $7 million this semester, which is really good. And we're hoping to get a similar number, if not more, for the winter semester and better inform how we're teaching CTC on campus. The second thing is the Exploration Credits Grading Proposal, which when myself and President Lay ran was called the Credit No Credit Grading Proposal. We changed the name to better represent what we're doing. That proposal is going extremely well. We've gotten very good feedback from GFC and what we're going to change. And it's expected to go to GFC in March for final approval to be implemented next year, which is very exciting. The third one is I'm currently working with Kristen to review the UASU Standing Committee or Committee Standing Orders, as we discussed in our last meeting. So I'll start that work. And hopefully we have something to bring to all of you and the committee chairs for January, so we can have a better discussion on what those responsibilities look like. Actually, I think that's all I have. The first one was not on my item, but yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Vice President Montero. And finally, President Lee.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. So one of the major items from the last couple of weeks was the last Board of Governors meeting for the year. I can say from that meeting and from the rest of what we've seen in the last few weeks that we have, I think, reached a really significant inflection point in how the university deals with campus sexual violence. From what I have seen, I think administration is taking this very seriously, and at this point, they do have to. The board chair, Kate Chisholm, has asked administration to get an independent audit done of the university's response to sexual violence, which I think will be very helpful, bringing in an outside perspective with the added gravitas of the support of the board chair and not just us. That should certainly be an opportunity to shine a lot of light into problems that we've pointed out for years and probably to find others that we probably know. So I'm very pleased to see the progress that's being made there. There was also a robust discussion about the future of a lot of the university's land holdings and a few other minor items dealt with at that board meeting. As VP Montero said, we're working on follow-up and implementation of GRTF, like we discussed at the last meeting. So VP Montero and the Manager of Administrative Services are putting together that proposal on committee restructuring. And then VPs Dixon and Kamani are putting together guiding values and principles document, which we'll use to inform further work at the end of this year and the next year. We have been doing a lot of work on the exceptional tuition increase proposals. I've been in contact with the minister's office and the university general counsel's office about this. I'll be able to share more details with this with all of you proposed. We have also been working to support a lot of FEE proponents on their proposals. As you all know, our current system for dealing with SRA fees and DFUs is really Byzantine and incredibly confusing. So we do need to make sure that, while we don't give them too much help, we help them navigate the process so they understand what they need to do. So just so you as counselors know what to expect in the coming months with some of the fees we've been working on. Because they are pursuing increases above CPI and are intended to be council rather than petition initiated, we are going to be pursuing the process under bylaw 2250, section 4.1 and 2256.7 for WSC and SLS. So on January 11th, we'll be coming to council to call for a vote on sending those two questions to bylaw committee. Those are on the work paper today, but that was a mistake. I submitted them for January 11th. So because I'm a mover, I can just unilaterally defer those to January 11th. The reason why we want to do it then is because there is a 14-day deadline in bylaw under 2255.3, I think, which would mean that bylaw committee would have to draft the questions during finals and over Christmas, which I just don't really think is entirely fair. So we'll be doing this in January, which leaves us enough time to get them in before the 30-day deadline, before elections, which is when we have to do that under 2250. Because the other two DFUs are only pursuing renewal at their current level, we're gonna be following the process in bylaw 6100, section 4. So we're working with the chair and bylaw of bylaw to address some problems that have come up throughout the process with bylaw committee's role in that. But you should expect to see those questions coming to council in January as well.
Fantabulous. Thank you so much, President Lay and the executive team, for your quick summaries, or sort of quick summaries today. We'll move quickly to board and committee reports. Governor Conrad is not present, so we're going to move straight into audit. If you don't have anything to report, please just pass on it and we'll keep going.
Yeah, super quickly, we've just been working on the changes we hope to implement for the next audit cycle and working with all the people who are doing their kind of proposals.
Fantastic. Is there a member of ARC that's present right now?
Yeah, so I have two things to speak about for ARC. The first one is, this is what we're on, because the residential school memorial was great. Thanks to everybody who came out and showed up to help with the setup and takedown, and also shared posts promoting the event. I know that ARC really appreciated it. And then the second thing is that ARC will be taking a look at the GRTF recommendations in an effort to legitimize council and the SU and kind of contribute to these conversations. So yeah, that's kind of two updates.
Fabulous. Thank you. Thank you. Let's move to bylaw.
Did audit go already?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. So bylaw has been reading bylaws and we're preparing for drafting government questions. So that's been pretty much all.
Fabulous. Thank you. Thank you, bylaw. It's always great to hear from you. CAC.
Hello, everyone. So basically not a lot from CAC, but I just wanted to make the announcement. Christian has already come to CAC probably a couple months ago now. That if you don't know, Christian Zagowski, who's the chief tribune of the die board, will be stepping down. And they're currently in the process of nominating a replacement for him. And so if you are in the committee, he has reached out to you and please respond. But then I have
eight. Thank you so much, CAC. Once again, it's always good to hear from the bosses. Okay, exec.
We've done a bunch of procedural stuff, but not that we need to take our time out tonight.
All right, thank you, thank you. Finance.
We ratified the Valley King Award, we ratified the Indigenous Student Awards, and we finished our mandate review. We're spring on one more, but we'll be updating all those soon.
Thank you, thank you. Okay. We're cruising through this non-call.
Nothing to report.
Okay, policy.
Policy should be back on Friday. We just vote to approve the first principles for the international student policy. So we'll be having that come to you guys for our next council meeting. We're really working on the final policies for enroll for this year.
Thank you. Thank you, policy. We have SCFC.
We finished our adjudication.
Ha, congratulations. SGC.
Yeah, so SGC was supposed to be making a decision to recommend student council to the relationship of the ISA and students council. And we didn't have a quorum on our meeting, so we are going to be setting a special meeting for January 11th to have a discussion and recommendation.
Fantastic. Susti.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry, I thought sustainability came after sustainability and capital fund, but that's what I have. We have completed our social sustainability draft recommendations, and we are now working on economic sustainability. That is all. And I'm sorry, Bill. I love you.
The love is shared. Thank you, Becky. Alrighty, let's move to translate. Wait, yes, translation.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, just literally every time I forget that I'm translation, we're working on translating the student charter of rights and responsibilities and doing a few other things. Yes, I'm not the chair of the committee, which is why I always forget, but I'm sorry.
That's all right. It can't happen. Okay, have I skipped any part?
The governance, so I'll just give an update right now. We've been having a lot of great discussions on governance, SRA, accountability, audit accountability, and now next semester we'll be taking a look at our bylaws because they're a mess.
Yeah. Well, thank you for governance. My honest apologies. So we're going to move to open forum and wait, hold on. Before we go there, is there anything else from the committees? No. Excellent. So moving on to section six of our agenda. This is once again is a space for our guests to pose questions to council based on what they've heard or on matters they feel need to be discussed. Seeing we haven't any guests other than our homies from the gateway, unless they have any questions, which is a lot. We'll move to section seven, just question period. Yeah, hearing no one is correcting me for open forum, so we'll go to question period. Let's just quickly run through the rules once again. Please do place your hand if you're here. Hand up to place on the speakers list if you'd like to speak from being online. Once again, enter your name in the chat, and we will do our best to enter you into the speakers list accordingly. Everybody's entitled to two speaking turns per motion, and so that's the business. So let's hear it. Let's have questions before the speakers list. Go ahead, Councillor Beasley.
This question is to Vice President Botan. Obviously, Calgary Leaving Cause is very unfortunate news. These are 26,000 undergraduate students that are all there for a cause. With that, I have two questions. I was wondering, first, you could get more clarity on how Cause and the UCSU are going to work together so we can still like have a really unified voice. And then B, what's Cause doing to make sure that no other SUs leave? Or is there any like worry about that? And yeah, just looking for more clarity. I'm assuming all this is going well.
Sure. So I think the first part of your question was sort of what how Calgary felt about. Yeah, so to my understanding, Calgary just had a lot of dissatisfaction with your graduation that in terms of the review, and I guess they didn't see they were getting like for their money in terms of our relationship going forward. They're technically still in that group the rest of these 90 days because they were 90 days notice. So they have access to the minutes, they have access to a lot of great information comes through the Advanced Education's office, and they can attend board meetings going forward. I think it is up to the incoming team of execs at Calgary to determine what they would like their relationship with Cause and other Alberta schools to be like. Presently, and I can say that we are more than happy to still collaborate with Calgary on the important issues that no matter like campus sexual violence or financial aid. And I think that a lot of the other members of Cause do feel the same way. In terms of what Cause is doing to make sure not a lot of other members leave. Like I said, that organizational review is still not happening, and we will get results hopefully come early January or early January. Having spoken to all of the other members, we, like I also mentioned, we do see that there are issues and structures that need to be changed, and everyone is committed to staying in cause and fixing those problems, because we ultimately see that, you know, working together is what helps, you know, move student issues in the province. And as the expression goes, you know, a tide rises all boats, or something like that. So I think that's the energy that causes operating on right now. Thank you.
Go ahead, Councilor Barazish.
Thank you. I just have a question for Vice President Kumar and Vice President Dixon. First of all, I'm going to preface this by saying I really appreciate all the work you've done on period equity. But I read in your report, Vice President Kumar, about all the dispensers that have gone up in both Denby and Sub. And I was just wondering if you can extend the thought process for putting so many dispensers into those that are so close to each other and not. Also working with August, or you are working, I'm sure, but why there aren't any discussions with August and CSJ yet, and why we haven't set some there before we have more on this campus. Thank you.
Yeah, I can answer this. The answer is pretty simple. CCR is the only building that would let us put dispensers up. And again, this is a pilot project, so we're trying to figure out how we can best run this project. And so there's kind of a few things at work here. The first one is CCR was the family, is the only building that would allow us to put up dispensers. The second thing was that we also, after kind of looking back on what Hampshire's year done, Katie's year done, and Millennia's year done, it was kind of identified as an interesting space because obviously when people are working out, if they don't have access to menstrual products, it's like not just like, oh shit, I like have to deal with this in class. It's like, I can't go to the gym and work out. It's a whole different thing. So we thought that that would help to address that issue there. Also a lot of community members use that space, so we thought it might be positive. The answer to why we don't have anyone on CSJ or August County yet is we are still trying to figure out how to actually keep our dispensers refilled in our own building and in this building. And so once we have kind of figured out the kinks of how to run this project, we want to put it on all of our campuses and all of our buildings. But that is going to be a process of figuring out the kinks in our own project, but also getting the university to allow us to put them in those buildings, because we definitely had conversations about it. But there's been a lot of resistance from FNO. But those are active conversations that are happening. The other thing's funding, but that's a whole other problem that we also still need to work to address. So definitely goals in the future, but simply put, the reason why is like we need to start small and build. Can't just like jump in head first because it won't be sustainable and we won't be able to keep it up next year. So yeah.
All right, thank you. Councilor Viloso.
I just have like a clarifying question. I don't know if this is for the execs or maybe the bylaw chair. But I know we had this like discussion, I think it was about finance regarding the dedicated units and sort of the renewal of them. And I know regarding bylaw 6100, I think it's on section. It says if they keep the unit, they also submit a proposed question on November 15th. The bylaw committee will assume responsibility for drafting the oversight question. I just really like wanted, because I know I think it was President Lay who mentioned that they have separate sort of timelines than amps. So I just wanted to sort of like ask about that and like when that timeline is.
Thanks. Yeah, for sure. Thanks for the question. So earlier in our exec reports, Ron kind of gave a brief outline of how we're going to go through this. What we decided is 6100 is very much a mess and it's very confusing, like we discussed in finance committee. So because of that, we will be using bylaw 2250. And that's when we'll be bringing the proposals to council for council approval. And then So we're going to be bringing them to council for council approval and then taking them to bylaw for them to make up that question. That's the timeline.
All right. Do we have any more questions from the floor? Nope. Well, that's how you know it's exam season. Okay. We have three questions. Let's see this. But thank you for your questions and the responses that have been provided. And we will move. I see the two motions have been put forward by President Levin. Supposed to be on our 11th of January papers, and that's essentially where we're going to move them to. So we're going to move to Vice President Montero's motion to discuss. Yes.
Mr. Speaker, can I move to put my item second? I might table it if I just want to make sure we have enough time to get to the internal session. So if we can go in camera first, and then if we have time, we'll go to my item. Otherwise, I'll just table it for next meeting.
All right.
Is that okay?
Yes, I think that's about it. So we're going to move, we'll have section 9B first, and then with the time provided, we'll have section 9A, otherwise table. Okay, fabulous. So once again, we're going to be moving into camera. For our guests, we will place you within, what's this thing called? In the waiting room. I haven't been in school for a while. We'll put you within the waiting room as this session is to move forward. The in-camera sessions are for members of council alone, since there is regularly quite confidential matters that are discussed.